This is Laura Deirdre with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Chris Bergman, Vice President and Chief Financial Officer at Dayton Children's Hospital. Chris, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
Thanks, Laura. Thanks for having me.
Now, I'm looking forward to our discussion because I know there's so much happening in healthcare right now, and particularly learning more about what you're doing at Dayton Children's and really tackling some of the challenges in healthcare today and in some, you know, for all healthcare institutions and some particularly for children's health. But before we dive into that, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your background?
Sure, Laura. I'll talk a little bit about my professional background, just a little bit about me personally. But I have been in healthcare finance for over 40 years with a long public accounting background at Ernst & Young when I left there. And then 20 years in what I would call medium-sized adult systems. I spent a little time in Colorado. I was in the first joint operating agreement out there when those were the big deal in the mid-90s. So journeying with that organization for 10 years, and then a little bit of time in Michigan and now down in Ohio, and kind of spending a lot of that time in the adult hospital world. And about a little over eight years ago, jumped into the pediatric scene at Dayton Children's. And it's been, again, I feel like for me, that medium, smaller size organization is a really good fit for kind of my personality and my skill set, as opposed to the larger organization. So that's kind of professionally. Personally, just one thing nugget about me is that, you know, God willing, in about a year, I'll be ordained in the Catholic Church as a deacon. So I've been on a faith journey for a period of time and about ready to take the next step. So that's a little bit about me personally.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. That's a huge accomplishment. And certainly, as you mentioned, something that is so important and really a pillar of the community as well. I can imagine it's been, like you said, a journey, but such a rewarding one, too.
It has been a great, rewarding journey all the way along. Got 16 other guys I'm journeying with, and it's been just a phenomenal experience.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, congratulations again, and definitely a lot to look forward to in this next year. And, you know, too, from your vantage point as CFO of Dayton Children's, what are some of the biggest issues that you're following in healthcare right now?
Well, there's a couple. There's the ones that are unique to the kids' world, and the one I'm going to talk about a little bit is pediatric mental health. You know, pre-COVID, we were starting to see more and more kids need behavioral health services. And COVID kind of really took it and just like made it go orbital on us. We've just seen an explosive need for mental health services for our kids. And I like to say that if you know a kid in middle school, if you know five kids in middle school, you've probably known one kid who's put together a suicide pact. And our highest admitting diagnosis in 2023 was suicide ideation at the hospital. And we're not unique to the other hospitals in the country, other children's hospitals in the country. So that one's a very big issue for us. And it's pretty underfunded in terms of, I mean, Ohio's doing a yeoman's job to try to put money into it, understanding the need and the need to fund it, but it's still largely an underfunded service. So when you think about my biggest growth opportunity over the next 5 years in a service that pays me a lot less than most of my other services do. So that's a challenge for us uniquely with the children's side of things. And I think that we also track in general, like most hospitals do, the whole labor workforce challenges we have. Just the work, I don't know if I call it the work ethic, the work code of people today are different. Not saying that's right, wrong, or indifferent. They're just different. So trying to find that nice medium, understanding that people aren't in it for the same reasons they were in it before. That Gen Z is different than the baby boomers, et cetera. So you're just trying to find that balance to how do I engage everybody across the spectrum? And also looking to see how do we, you know, if there's a shortage out there, how do we change how we do work so that we make sure we have the right people in the right place at the right time? So that's the second one. The third one, kind of honestly, has been in the headlines. The whole cyber thing has been big. Even pre-COVID, we've been building cyber capabilities at our place in terms of trying to keep attacks out, ransomware, et cetera. And just, you know, you got this whole Change Healthcare that's impacting hundreds or thousands of hospitals across the country right now. And that's a challenge for us, as well as, you know, big ransomware attack at Lurie's Children. So in my own world, one of our own children's hospitals being attacked in Chicago. And a lot of disruption, a lot of costs. We have a lot of preventive costs in place. We're only as good as the guy that figures out how to get through our systems or the next person who gives away their credentials, right? So those are, to me, the three big issues. One that's generically healthcare labor, one that's uniquely different in the kids' world, pediatric mental health. And the other one's kind of ubiquitous across all companies is cyber issues. And we just happen to have a lot of information that people like to get. So those are kind of the three biggest things I see us tracking in 24 and obviously beyond that too.
Absolutely. I think all those aspects you mentioned are so fascinating and certainly top of mind for many executives across the board today. And in particular, as you were talking through the cyber attack issues, I can imagine, you know, for years, like you said, it's been something that has loomed in some organizations that have been hit. But now with Change Healthcare, one of the largest companies connected with Optum and United Health Group in the country and associated with healthcare in particular, too. So, you know, in seeing that hit and the disruption from that particular side of things, how do you, I guess, think about that? I know you mentioned obviously being able to have somewhat of a ability to build capabilities and think through what kind of financial responsibility that you have to put away in put parts of the budget and hospital finances towards the cyber attack and planning for a potential recovery if something happens. But from, you know, just kind of like looking at the way you're thinking about it today versus the way you thought about it 5 years ago, you know, what's kind of different? How have things evolved?
I think our education of our employees has evolved. I always tell the funny story. When we first started down this path of trying to test people, like you send them a fake email, right? And you see if they respond, and then you use that as a training tool, a training platform to say, okay, here's what you should have noticed in this email that why you shouldn't have responded to it, right? So I'm teaching you to not respond to things that are coming in. The funny one was 5 years ago, we sent one out and said, oh, Christmas time as usual, we're going to get, which isn't as usual because we don't do this, we're going to give you a free turkey. So put all your click on this link and put all your information in. And of course, it was a fake thing. And somebody actually responded to our messages saying, well, you know, last place I worked, they actually offered you a turkey or a ham. And I'm like, that guy's going to be really disappointed when he finds out we were just testing to see if he put his information in. But that's how we've evolved to, that's not an issue anymore. We're testing people with, you know, real things. A lot of times during the January timeframe, we'll put stuff out there about W-2 information because that's a real thing. And I remember even 5 years ago, my CEO saying, well, Chris, can you make it not seem so real? I'm like, well, you know, the bad guys make it look real. We have to make our fake things look real so we can test and we can educate. We're not trying to hold anybody. It's not punitive. It's like, okay, we need to educate more here. We need to tell people what this is like, et cetera. So there's that piece that we've escalated our testing, but that's only so good. Then you've got 24-hour monitoring if things are starting to ping us, like what's our systems look like? It says, here's some walls up here that we're looking and training. You know, you have to have software products that look at those things and try to keep things out. I mean, I guess we turn down thousands of emails a day that are phishing emails, and some get through. And CEOs and CFOs and C-suite members are huge targets for all those things. And my CEO is super savvy at all this. I actually fell to one not too long ago, and it's just because it looked super real. And it's so easy. I mean, I worry about it all the time because I get so many of these things. I know sometimes I don't respond when I should have because I think they're fake. And so it's a disruptor. But you never say you're in good shape because you're only as good as the guy tomorrow that does something. But a lot of times what we found is it's people freely giving up their credentials that is what how people, the bad guys get in. And so it's just a matter of trying to train people for that. You know, now they're intercepting, you know, you have the authenticator thing that comes in and texts you and says, you know, put in this number. Well, they're faking those things now too. So now they've infiltrated that piece. So it's just constantly trying to stay ahead of them. And you end up having an infrastructure. You have a team that monitors the traffic. You got software tools. And now all of a sudden you have a cache in your system to try to do something. You really, this adds zero patient care to what you're doing in your organization. It's just some way to try to keep the bad guys from getting all your stuff and locking down your systems. And so it's unfortunate. So now it's a cost of business to do it. But that's how it's changed over. I mean, I would say 5 years ago, we had very few of those tools, but we've really escalated our training and education and the tools we have to try to monitor that stuff. And we continue to look at that. And our guys are dialed into all the cyber networks out there, and they talk to the Fed, you know, because the Feds host different things as to what's going on in terms of the threat alerts that are out there. So they stay on top of that to try to do the best they can to keep us safe.
Absolutely. That's so helpful to hear and think through. And, you know, definitely is something that I can imagine, just like you said, continues to evolve and change. And so staying on top of it is a challenge. Mm-hmm. When you look ahead, what are you most excited about and what makes you nervous?
Well, I think there's some really cool things going on. So the cyber side, the digital things that we're communicating with our patients and families, et cetera. So for us, we're a little bit different in the pediatric world in that most of the people we communicate with are millennials, you know, because they're in that 30 to 40 year range as the parent that we're dealing with. Whereas the adult hospitals have different age groups and generations they're talking to. But we have a lot of people in that group, and they like to be communicated with digitally, right? So they don't want a phone call. They don't want an email. I mean, they're digital. A lot of times they're digital natives because they grew up with it all. And so, but it's exciting there to start figuring out how to get away from paper processes and old things, et cetera, and move into that era. So that's exciting. It's scary at the same time because there's a little bit of impersonal piece of that too, right? When you do that, you're disconnecting the personal touch into a digital touch, which loses something from that perspective. But it's exciting because we can build those tools. We have it probably maybe a little bit easier on the pediatric side to do it because most of our patients' families, the people we communicate with, are in that small group versus the adults that have the seniors and the 30-year-olds and everybody in between that all have different communication methods. That's not to say we don't, but by and large, we have a large group of people that can be communicated with in one fashion. So I think that's exciting. The other piece that we're seeing on the pediatric front is the pediatricians have largely been independent in the pediatric world. Usually in the pediatric world, the hospitals will employ the specialists and subspecialists, but the pediatricians have tended to be independent. They're starting to come into employment with us, which gives us a great opportunity to integrate all that information so that we can really tie in, you know, all your well checks and all those things into ED visits and costly healthcare and things like that. So there's to me, that's exciting. That's integration. That's integration of healthcare at its best. And so those are two, I think, that are exciting. There's obviously costs, and you know, when you start employing physicians, do you lose money, et cetera, et cetera. So those are all your things you worry about. But see, if you look at it as this ability to really transform how we deliver care, I find that really, really exciting. The other piece we've been working on from a clinical side, and I got involved because we're looking at, you know, cost, how do we improve cost outcomes, et cetera, is just this whole notion of, once a person comes in and is admitted, are we managing their discharge? Are we discharging them when we think we're ready to send them home? Are we managing them up front and educating them, et cetera, which yields a whole bunch of great outcomes. I mean, one, from the finance guy's perspective, it's probably better cost because I'm not going to have all this variation in my patient pathways because we're going to be talking to patients the day they come in the door when they should be going home. We're going to be managing them to an expected discharge date. That may change, but at least we're managing to a date we think about. So that helps manage costs. But I think from the patient communication, patient expectation perspective, I think it's got tremendous upside to help them understand and be more transparent with them on how their care journeys through while they're at the hospital. So to me, that's exciting. That's transforming how we deliver care. It isn't just the standard, standard finance stuff of trying to do something for a little bit less money than we spent the year before, which we have to do too. I mean, we have to figure out all those pieces as well, but trying to transform it where you really get some different change to me is exciting. And the final thing for us is we're starting to, in the pediatric world, we've got some areas of town that are largely underserved with very little access to, primary care sorts of services. And so we're starting to venture out into those areas. We take risk on a Medicaid contract. And so we're able to reinvest those dollars into, going out to, into these communities and bringing healthcare out to them. So it's more convenient for them to do, which should be transformative for them as well. Because they won't be always being seen in the emergency room. So we have a lot of kids who are seen in the emergency room simply because they don't have access to anything else. So that's, to me, that's exciting too, to try to change how we take care of our community better.
That's amazing to hear, and definitely so important, as you said, just to have that access to care, and really cool to see some of those trends, whether it's with kind of the digital access and being able to connect easily in a way that is convenient for patients, and then too, having the pediatric physicians now coming into employment. I think that's such an interesting trend. What do you think is driving them into the employment space and versus being independent as they had been for so many years?
Well, it's interesting, but some of it's the impact of COVID. So even though how many years are we past COVID? Who could say, right? Who knows when COVID actually ended? But as they came out of COVID and some of the recovery dollars went away, they found some people had changed patterns. So, when you have young kids and they get sick, you want them seen right away, but sometimes they get better in 72 hours. Well, during COVID, you actually found that out because you didn't go take them out. You just kind of wrote it out sometimes. So some things changed from that perspective. And that as a parent, maybe I thought I don't need to take my kid to the doctor as quickly as I did in the past, right? That's one. All these are little pieces, but they all impacted their volume. People found alternative ways to do it. They did virtual, televisits. They went to urgent cares, or we have a series of these pediatric minute clinics we've opened. So people started going to those. So they didn't go to their pediatrician. So you had another little piece of their business that went away, from that perspective. And then their cost of running their business went way up, because when inflation went high here 18 months ago, whenever it was, they had an 8% cost of their labor workforce and the same labor challenges we have, but we're a large organization. We can figure a lot of those things out. They can't. And so they've had a loss of volume and an increase in cost. And I think, and they have the same similar challenge like I talked about before, the workforce, is that people coming out of medical school don't necessarily want to go entrepreneurially and go run their own practice anymore. They kind of want to just be employed. They don't want to have to worry about running their own business. And so I think these guys have been in it for a long time. They can't recruit guys to come in and do what they used to do. It's a different piece. I think that there's kind of a three-pronged piece to that. Is I think there's loss of volume, there's higher costs, and I think it's hard for them to find replacement guys to come in and it's hard to fund them. If I got a little bit loss of volume and higher costs, I don't have as much money to try to subsidize a new guy coming into my practice. And so I think all those things put together is really hard for them to continue to manage through. So you're seeing more of them come to the door and saying, we've been working with them for years. They largely work with us. It's just they've been working with them as an independent organization. But now that they have a tighter relationship with us, we can incorporate them into our electronic medical record, which happens to be Epic, but we can incorporate it in there. Now, all of a sudden, you've got this full patient record, right? And so it's really got some great benefits from that perspective.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for going through that with us and going one bit deeper. It's really just helpful and informative. Before we wrap up our conversation here, we've talked a lot about some of the ways healthcare is changing, whether it's through technology, obviously a lot of workforce changes, and then certainly, different patterns from patients as well as what communities want and need from healthcare. So What do you think the most effective healthcare leaders will need to be successful over the next 2 to 3 years or so?
I think you have to approach everything that, so I'll first talk about the broader healthcare leader and then a little bit about the finance guy, but I think you have to approach it that the way I did it isn't always the right way going forward, and that we really have to think differently. And it's hard. It's really, and I'm not saying you're always stuck in the past, but it's just hard to make transformative change and really change what you're doing. And you really have to think about it. If workforce is going to get tighter, costs are going to be higher. It's just, and there's going to be continued pressure on rates in terms of what, how we're paid. I think you just have to keep, you have to keep constantly looking at how you transform your business. And as a healthcare leader, too, one of the things we found with some of our healthcare leaders is they think they know what the consumer wants, but they really need to listen to the consumer. Like in our world, is that because we have this millennial group, you have to understand what I call them, the Amazon.Prime generation, right? Oh, it's 10 o'clock tonight and I need something tomorrow. So I go online and I order it and I get it, right? That's what, they want healthcare the same way. And we have to figure out how, we can't deliver the same way Amazon Prime can, but we have to figure out how to deliver something that they want and meet them somewhere versus thinking that we've had people who said, we had some pediatricians in our community that thought consumerism was a disease that was going to go away. And we can't wait till they come back to come in and visiting us when we want to be here. And it's like, well, that's not going to happen. So as a healthcare leader, you got to understand, like, what's the consumer, what's going on, and how do I meet them where they need to be so that they're, that I'm meeting their needs within obviously a reasonable cost perspective, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that's a big piece on a broad basis. You know, as a finance guy, I always say you got to keep your finger on the revenue cycle, because I would say I have a really good revenue cycle leader. I have a pretty good revenue cycle, but you know, if we don't stay focused on it, we wake up one day and we've lost 1.5% of our revenue through a variety of things. The payers aren't looking to pay us more. So we have to kind of think that and say they're not looking to pay us more. So they're always changing subtle things, slight things. And if we don't stay on top of it, it's really easy to lose 1%, and that's a lot of money. So he's just, I think the finance guy, sometimes it's like, yeah, revenue cycle is kind of ho-hum because it's the same thing, but it doesn't take long to lose 1% or 2% or 3% of that. And all of a sudden that's a big margin. You're not getting paid for what you're doing, in the organization. So that's a big piece. And I just think that the other thing I'd say on the finance side is you gotta be like you may not be the COO, but you got to be like the COO. You got to really understand what's going on so you can try to help make some of those changes. And a lot of CFOs have gone down that path, so I'm not trying to say they don't, but I think you've got to always think about the fact that it's not just financial. And I always say that sometimes I have to invest in something to get the return later, and you got to really think about that. You got to look at long-term. One of the things we've tried really hard to do is, on the finance side, you have to look at the monthly results, but you can't just be myopic on the monthly results. You got to look long-term and say, are we going where we need to be going? And I'm looking at the long-term health of the organization, not what happened yesterday or today or tomorrow or next week or this month or whatever. So I think some of those pieces to say, how do I look forward? How do I continue to work on transforming care and looking at my consumers, and then just kind of keeping your fingers on that revenue cycle and making sure that you're constantly collecting everything, billing and collecting, coding, capturing, whatever you want to call it, everything you can. I might as well get paid for everything I do in the organization. So,
yeah, I think all those are such a great point, and definitely interesting from the CFO perspective, as you were talking about how to really get out of having that myopic finance focus and really think broadly and look broadly, think ahead and look at, you know, where healthcare is transforming. And I think it goes back to so much of what we've talked about already, whether it's looking at workforce or where healthcare is taking place inside of the hospital or outside of the hospital and technology and all of these things. I can imagine, you know, having that open mind and being able to transition along with healthcare is not always easy, but definitely one way that, you know, you can really put yourself in the best position to be successful in the future.
Yes, I learned the challenges is we're all trained in the finance world. We're trained in our skill set, a lot of times our personalities that we go into that profession. We're trained in and kind of formed into that's how I think. It's harder to think differently sometimes. That's just how we're trained to do. And you have to have some of that. I can't let today get away from me either, but I can't just be focused on today. I can't worry about how many FTs I had today or whatever the case may be. I do, but I also got to look ahead and say, am I moving in the right direction? Do I have the tools in place to help people do their things? And maybe one of the last thing I'd say, because we have no idea how to figure this out, is the whole AI thing and even defining what AI means. Like, what is AI? Is it machine learning? Is it truly, is it the ChatGPT stuff? Is it broad? I mean, we're still trying to get our hands around that. It's, but that's just something that I didn't even list. And any of the things we talked about, which that's still out there as a big thing, but I couldn't tell you what I even think about it at this point in time. I think you got to get your arms around it and define it first so you can figure out where you want to go with it.
Yeah, definitely. That's such a great point. So many of these conversations, AI comes up and, you know, definitely in a space where it's still very much evolving in understanding exactly what that means and what it entails for healthcare and health systems. So it'll just be interesting to see over the next few months here where things go and how health systems can really produce some of these great use cases for it and then continue to evolve.
Absolutely.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. This has been such a fascinating discussion. I wish we had two or three more hours here to talk about it, but, you know, hopefully we'll be able to catch up again soon and looking forward as well to have you speaking at our fall events here in Chicago, our Health IT Digital Health and Revenue Cycle event, as well as CEO CFO Roundtable. So it'll be great to have you here in person.
Yeah, I'd like to meet you, Laura, when I get there.